How to become a character in a novel. There used to be only one way, to be acquainted with a novelist and then be enough of a jerk or a wretch or a weirdo that the author expropriates your quirks to immortalize in fiction. But now there is another way. Submit the winning bid in an eBay auction next month, and some of America's most famous novelists will name a character in one of their upcoming books after you. All proceeds will go to the Oakland-based nonprofit group The First Amendment Project, a cause close to the heart of Pulitzer Prize winner Michael Chabon. Inspired by a similar but smaller name auction by novelist Neil Gaiman, Chabon successfully, to use his phrase, roped in 15 other authors for the fundraiser, including Stephen King, Dave Eggers, and John Grisham. Michael Chabon, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
Artists don't typically like to surrender any control over their creations. Was it difficult to do the roping?
I ran into a little resistance here and there. There definitely were a few authors who just could not bring themselves to surrender even that relatively small degree of control. And that's something I sympathize with completely. You know, names seem relatively insignificant, perhaps, to the reader, but most writers I know take a lot of time with their characters' names. And in fact, a character's name, if chosen properly, can really enrich a novel. It can add a dimension of, you know, symbolism.
I think they can actually inform the personalities of the character.
Oh, absolutely.
Grady Tripp, to use one of yours, this self-destructive and irresponsible novelist from The Wonder Boys.
Right.
I mean, let's say some guy named Howard Rutstein had bought the name. Could Howard Rutstein have been such a self-indulgent stoner? What about Uriah Heep, Tom Jones, Don Quixote?
Uriah Heep, I mean, when you cite that, you know, Charles Dickens, I think Dickens might be the perfect place to look for a kind of instantaneous understanding of just how important characters' names can be. They're just perfectly named in almost every case, you know, Micawber, Pickwick, and so on. It is important. I think that's part of the reason why this auction is, in a sense, worth doing, and that it's not like auctioning off the rights to, I don't know, have the spine of the book be colored to the choice of the person who's the highest bidder. I mean, you actually are winning something that is at least modestly meaningful. It does mean something to me, and it obviously meant something to the writers who, in spite of their love for the First Amendment, still weren't willing to give it up.
Do you think you'll create a character out of whole cloth just to accommodate the auction?
You never know. I mean, I know Amy Tan has told me that when she did this for a local fundraiser, originally she intended to bestow this name on a relatively minor character, but the name that was the winning name, she loved it so much that she ended up turning it into a significant character in the novel.
Well, you know, I myself am a very literary person, and last year I was watching Desperate Housewives, and there was a scene in which, out of just nowhere, for no apparent reason that had anything to do with the plot, a brand new Buick showed up in a scene because General Motors had paid for the product placement.
Yeah.
You see where I'm going with this?
Are you asking me, like, what if Steve Jobs is the winning bidder? And
for example, I mean, just how do we avoid the total non sequitur aspect of a winning entry altering the novel in an unsatisfactory way?
Well, that can happen too. And I think most of the authors have been careful to reserve the right to, in some way or another, use the name as they see fit. There is a slight open-endedness to this because it's entirely possible that you might get a name that in itself is a fine name for a character but just can't possibly work in whatever it is you have going right now. I'm writing a novel now that's set in a hypothetical Yiddish-speaking district of the United States that was created during the Second World War. You know, all of the characters have names that are typical European Jewish names. So if, you know, Jim Johnson or something were the winning bidder, I would have a really hard time fitting him and his name into this book I'm working on now. And in that case, I will just save it for the next one.
Now, if this is successful, raising funds for the First Amendment Project, is there a logical next step? I mean, I'm thinking of FedEx Field and the Staples Center. Do I have to worry about a Delta Airlines Adventures of Cavalier and Clay?
This has been tried, as you may be aware. Not so many years ago, Faye Weldon wrote what I believe was a short novel, more or less at the behest of Bulgari, the perfume and jewelry people. in which the names of Bulgari and its various products were liberally salted through this novel, and Bulgari paid Faye Weldon to do this. And so what you're talking about has already been attempted. I think it suffers from one really grievous conceptual error, which is, you know, that works of fiction have the prominence and ubiquity to make them really effective and viable means of advertising products. You know, I can remember the era where paperback books had ads in them. There would be an ad for True Cigarettes, for example, right in the middle of the paperback book. And I don't think readers responded very favorably, or else perhaps, proving my theory, it just was a totally ineffectual way of trying to advertise something, because those ads disappeared and you don't see them anymore.
One final thing. Speaking of names, more or less by accident, I discovered that our daughters are both named Ida Rose. What are the odds?
You're kidding me. Your daughter's name is Ida Rose?
You know, every other Ida Rose in America, apart from your daughter and mine, are 99 and a half years old. We have the only two Ida Roses under the age of 6, I'm sure, in the world.
I think you're right. That's amazing.
All I'm saying is, with respect to Ida, keep her name out of any future novels, will you, bud? Michael, thank you so much. I appreciate you joining us.
Oh, thanks a lot, Bob. Good talking to you.
Michael Chabon is the Pulitzer Prize-winning author of The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. The auction for his character's name begins September 1st. That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Megan Ryan, Tony Field, Jamie York, and Mike Volo, and edited by Brooke. Dylan Keefe is our technical director, and Jennifer Munson, our engineer. We had help from Sarah Dalsimer and Rob Weisberg. Our webmaster is Amy Pearl.
Katya Rogers is our senior producer, and John Keefe, our executive producer. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. You can listen to the program and find free transcripts, MP3 downloads, and our podcast at onthemedia.org, also on the iTunes podcast directory. And you can email us at onthemedia@wnyc.org. This is On the Media from WNYC. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org, the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the Foundation of Entrepreneurship, on the web at kauffman.org, and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. Support for On the Media comes from the Lincoln Center, presenting the Mostly Mozart Festival, and the Bidell Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.